And we're back. Back with Sue. Sue, welcome back.
Thank you.
Been a long time. 1.5 minutes, probably. You had something on there that kind of jumped out at you. This is the sheet, folks, that has today's reading on it. And by the way we do our work and our service work, we revolve around a system that has actually 30 days of recovery devotional for each month. And for us, that's the step that corresponds with the month. So step 8, which is this step where we make a list of people we've harmed, and 8 month is August. So we're August, and it's day six. So it's August 6th, and step 8 for us. So what was it on there, Sue, that kind of jumped out at you?
I can't remember.
Something to do with God. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, it was well, this step tells to make a list, and that was the point I was making. You make a list. It's not like I have to run and find everyone on the list to make amends, right?
Yeah.
If I make a list of the people that I've harmed, right? And because I always include a higher power, so long as I'm ready, willing, and able to make amends to those people, I can ask that the situation present itself, right? And often it does, for me to do that, right?
Yeah.
I think in my own situation too, I don't know, because I was brought up in the Catholic faith, there was this great thing about conscience, right? So if I did something wrong, I knew immediately, right? I could not go on and not repair that. I can remember as a kid, right? I had to go and make it right, because otherwise it would bother me. I had this strong sense of conscience. It was kind of drilled into me, right? So but I think in my own family, the situation I kind of came across, even though we all lived in that situation that was going on in the family, different, it affected different kids differently, right?
Well, one nice thing about the Catholic faith, and I was not brought up Catholic, I was not brought up in any relationship with any kind of higher power or God, but I see today the value in confession, which is so alive in the Catholic faith, and to at least clear your conscience on the highest level there is, you know, the way I see it today, is so important. And I know a lot of us, you know, back in the old days, we would say, oh yeah, those guys, they can do anything and they just go to church and it's all done. I said, well, what do we do? You know, but, it's still a good idea. And, you know, once we get past, it's not an excuse for, you know, purposefully going out and creating havoc and then running to the priest, but it's, but confession is important. I mean, even in scripture, it tells us, you know, it doesn't say you have to go to a priest, but it says you make sure you discuss with someone who believes the same way, you know, what you've done wrong. Otherwise, it's incomplete.
It's sort of like clearing it on a more of a daily basis, too, or more regularly, as opposed to leaving it for, you know, for 30 years of your life, and now you're in this horrific situation, and you don't know how you got here, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't clear the sheet, pretty much daily, I mean, you know, the baggage becomes unbearable. I mean, how do you drag around what's been going on 30, 40, 50, 60, however old we are, years, you know, and not be weighed down? I mean, like, you're like a computer, and everything that comes at you has to go through everything you're trucking around with. So, I mean, you've got 8 million pounds of baggage internally, and, you know, that's part of your processing equipment. And whenever something comes at you, any kind of information has to be processed through all of that stuff. So, you know, you carry around an awful lot more, you know, unnecessary tooling, if you will, to, you know, which takes a lot of time, too, and everything else. So you had made a good point, and our step 10, folks, is all about, which is our October phase, but it's all about being able to repair on the go kind of thing. So we say in that step that we, you know, did an inventory, but fixed the problems right away. So, I mean, you know, went to people and didn't let anything stew or fester, you know, and you bury seeds that fester, I mean, you all of a sudden have an awful lot of seeds that fester, and then you really got a problem. So, we got to clear things up, and that's a key. When we go into jails, and Sue does jail work, just like I do for a lot of years, she's done it, we don't seem to have a forgiveness situation, you know, because, well, for one thing, we've not been offended against in, you know, in the cases that we're dealing with. But there's kind of a love that grows naturally. I don't know how to even explain it, but whereby the people who want something greater and higher or whatever, those are the ones in the jails that come out and see us. They want something different. They want to change. They don't like this life, you know. And that seems to make all the difference. I mean, but we're able to love those guys, and somehow those guys or girls, whichever jails we're in, love us the same way. And it's kind of like an unconditional thing that happens for that hour or two inside. And I can't see it happening anywhere else, you know, in the world for me. And I think, well, you know, this doesn't make a lot of sense, but I guess that's why I go to so many of those places and do so many meetings. But, I don't know. It's phenomenal. I wish I could find the ingredients and take them out of there and use it in my own life elsewhere. You know, it's wonderful to glimpse these experiences, but if you can't translate them into the people closest to you, you know, are they any good? So
I think the key thing you said, though, is the people that come out to our meetings are the ones that want it. They want a different life. They want the program, and I think that that's the prerequisite, really, to everything. Yeah, I mean, like, I was in there last night. It was, the whole hour was like, well, it was like divine intervention. It was totally spiritual, and there was so much love there.
Yeah.
Because it's odd. You're on that same path, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
You're wanting it.
Yeah.
You're wanting it. And that's the sort of key, really. And so everything. And it's funny, I've experienced this in many places I've been, in many situations, whereby I'm drawn into the space of a person who's on that same path as me, i.e. in an airport. I can plonk myself down on a seat, and lo and behold, if I start talking to the person next to me about nothing, basically, you know, all of a sudden we have something in common. We're moving, and it's bizarre how it happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think with the guys in jail, like you say, nothing has been done to us directly, so there isn't that emotional involvement, And I'm with a lot of guys when they come out too.
That's right.
I don't really want to know, what they've done, because when I see them as they are today.
Mm-hmm.
And we're exactly the same.
That's right.
I don't want to know the baggage because, well, I could say that might affect me, but I don't think it would now because I found out a lot of the stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't affect me. But when I first meet them, I don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great for me.
Yeah.
Because I meet them just as they are right in front of me now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
Well, there is definitely some magic and I mean, I think the spiritual thing.
Mystical.
Totally. And the way it happens, because we can go in there, you know, one of us could be an addict or an alcoholic or nothing, or both of us could be, and both of us could be nothing, you know. We could be maybe we're hungry for spiritual things, whatever it is. We come from a whole bunch of different areas in life too, and we're able to go in there and with prisoners of all, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. From the least harmful domestic to multiple murders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and see every one of them the same way. For at least for that time in there, you know.
Yeah.
and nobody is interested in talking very much about, you know, what they did or not. And the odd time when they do, which is amazing too, you know, we'll have people in there from different ranges, so they're not tight in the prison sense where they, you know, they've had a whole bunch of one-on-ones, and they know what they can do and say and get away with and that kind of stuff. But they'll get to a point in these meetings where they come from different ranges, and they'll all get comfortable enough to even bring up the crimes, you know, that this shouldn't have been a murder and that shouldn't have been that. And just the fact that goes on a little bit is, it's like people are making themselves vulnerable when they don't have to, but they know they're safe in that vulnerability, which is very powerful. You know, for me, when I see that, and I think, and then I'm there. Never mind all the guys in orange. I mean, I'm there, and I can leave in an hour. I could take whatever I want out of here with me. Yet there's that trust and everything that when we're together in that room, everything is going to be okay.
Yes.
And that is...
That's a biggie, the trust factor.
Yeah. And you know, we read a reading, folks. It's called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. And what it really does, for me anyway, it splits time. It splits, you know, the next thing I'm going to do in my life from the thing I've just completed. So whatever it is, it's like that behind me is done and that in front of me is coming. But this thing in between that we call now is a sacred place where time doesn't move, you know, because it's always now. You know, it's never anything else and it never will be. And now in and of itself, by itself, is a wonderful, beautiful place. So it's like in the jails, it's like we all kind of find the now, we all get into it, we have a meeting outside of time, and then we go back into our prison cells or out in our cars, whatever we're doing, and everything was perfect in there, and nothing's transpired. It feels like that, like the time passage doesn't even become a factor until we're given a sign by some guard or something, we got to get out of there. But it's very powerful, you know. And one of the things that hit me this morning, and you may have found something in this whole forgiveness and amending and, you know, and making up and so on, is that even that we cannot do alone, you know. We need God, we need our sense of higher power, whatever that is, even other people if we don't believe in a God, even groups of people, because two brains are better than one, that kind of thing. But we still, you know, at the end of the day, need each other, you know, as well as God. And even to do that, and you feel that in those rooms where those people are, there's something in common there. Everybody just fits, you know, and you don't even feel that in the meetings outside, you know, where we go and everybody's free, you know. I don't know. We have to all go in jail to be real or something. It's a strange scenario. Yeah. And I can't figure that one out, but... you know, they are so powerful to me. When we look at this step, and it is really about making a list, number one. So we want to put everybody on a list. Everybody, in my case, the way I do it is current relationships. I don't go back to child and all that stuff every time. I've done that kind of thing many times. So today it's, you know, what sort of relationships do I have, good, bad, or indifferent? But I don't think about that. I just put names like A, B, C, D, F, G. And I don't do anything with those names until I've got a whole list of names and I don't have any more people I can think of. And then I go back and I look at each name and I give each one, you know, like a half a minute or something. And if doing that evokes any kind of emotion, good, bad, indifferent, or whatever, I check that. Because I know any kind of emotion tells me that there's something there. I don't know what it is even at that point. I don't care. I just check it. If it's a dead time, you know, it's another name and it doesn't seem to be any meaning, and I just cross it off. And when I've finished doing that with every name, I have the list of potential amends of some sort. And they may be, as the scripture referenced here, it may be a reconciliation that is more lopsided the other way than this way, and there's nothing for me to forgive and that kind of thing, or forgiveness will be dangerous and I'll never go there anyway, but I'm not worried about that stuff. Yeah. At this point, it's just the obvious, okay, there's 10 people that I get a sense of something in my gut when I look at those names, so I just gotta figure those out. And that's the next step when we're actually gonna do it. It's not this step, so. So August, in a sense, is just coming up with a list, and then finding a way to be willing to go to the next step, which is making the actual amends. So willingness, a lot of people talk about in these programs as being so huge, simply because our will just gets us in trouble. So what will do we use to do anything properly? You know, so we want to, for instance, in the Lord's Prayer, where we say, forgive us our trespasses or our sins or whatever, you know, as we forgive those who, you know, mm-hmm. sin against us. So it can be either side, but we just want to reconcile and fix the situation, not fix the person, not fix me, but, have this as something that I can put behind me when I'm finished doing this. So, when you make a list, do you have any, tricks? And if you have a way to become willing, please share it with us. How do you go about that?
I think it comes from the journey, in actual fact, because, the closer you get to, power, a higher power of your understanding, the willingness should be automatic, right? Because I've basically surrendered myself at that point, mm-hmm. right? And so if I'm told to go left, go down there, yeah. I would go because I'm totally sort of interconnected with this higher power. It's the mystery of it, right? I'm not on the front of the bike anymore. I'm on the back. Mm-hmm. So if I'm told to do something and something is amiss here, I can remember, some years ago, I can remember asking, show me what it is about me that is not right with you, right? Mm-hmm. Because like I mentioned, like it's very easy to see the weaknesses of other people in the family situation, mm-hmm. right? You don't see your own, I was definitely that way. And so I asked, you know, what are the obvious things that I'm not seeing that aren't right with mm-hmm. you, right? And, it was amazing. I mean, I got shown that. You don't get shown it all the time, but little things will happen and are sort of exposed to me. So, having gone through that and done that, mm-hmm. you know, the willingness comes from just wanting to keep that closeness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
So it's all part of the journey, I think. Mm-hmm. And, it comes with the journey. If you soak it up like a sponge and you want this program.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get everything you need, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is amazing because the program is all-encompassing, and you know, on a worldly basis, not many people know that. You know what I mean? They think, oh, that thing is for alcoholics or something. I mean, this is so far beyond.
It's crazy. It's a life program for everybody.
Yeah, that's right,
You just substitute the word alcohol for whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever the burden is too,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. And that's why we started that.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
For that reason, to give
it doesn't matter what it is. You can work these steps and have a totally different life. And it's cheaper than going to a psychiatrist.
That's right.
But that's what it is. It's, it's diagnosing yourself, right? You don't look at it as that when you go in, mm-hmm. but that's exactly what happens, right? But you have a program that gives you tools when you get back out there, right? I mean, it's fine coughing up your whole life story to someone, mm-hmm. and then you walk out of that room, and you've got no tools. How do I manage? I've got all of this up. But this program gives you a way. If you live your life according to these 12 steps, you have the way to be able to manage your life, and you have slogans, and you have support.
And you have
everything.
And
you have a spiritual awakening, and you have a reprogramming of your old thought system. And I think that was the biggest thing for me. My mind got reprogrammed, right?
Yeah.
Because the way I was thinking, which was the way I was conditioned when I was a child, right? Was all, I read books that said, forget everything you've ever been told, right? Like, wipe the slate clean. You know, like, you get reprogrammed, new paths are set in your brain so that, you don't do the same things. I don't do the same things I was doing before.
Yeah.
Because I have a new way now, right? Yeah.
To too soon old and too late smart, the German ladies.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters, you know, because, well, love conquers all. I was saying last night in the jail, you know, well, with my situation, we lived in a lot of turmoil, and a lot of it was me. I mean, I discovered, I thought it was always the other person, but it was me, because I was just fighting. I was fighting mad about the situation.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to fight it instead of respond, right? Mm-hmm. I was the reaction person instead of the person who responds. Yeah. And I remember the first meeting I went to, this old timer, and this is like 25 years ago. I mean, people don't say that today. In those days, you were told what to do, you know, when you went into a meeting, right? And it didn't bother me, because I thought, these people have been through this program. They know what they're talking about, right? And she told me, you add fuel to the fire. You have to keep your mouth shut in the family, right? Yeah, because you're just making it all blow up, right? Yeah. And so that was a fiery person changed, you know, to a more softer one, I hope, you know, and a more compassionate and a more quieter, just by looking, you know, at my part in everything. Yep. Like when something happens, like you talk about making your list for me daily, if something happens in the family, I have to think, what was my part in that, right? Yeah. You know, I don't get off scot-free, which I considered I did initially, right? Yeah. I play a
and
big
hold,
part
hold that
in
thought,
it.
Sue. We're going to have to take another break here before we get too far in and pay the last of the bills. We used to play music, but I was told after a long period that really a talk show doesn't need a song in between segments. So now we just pay bills. Jennifer, it's all yours.
Thanks.